Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hello, and welcome to Atheistically Speaking, episode 123. 123. Oh, well, there you go. Numerology means something. I have an extra special guest with us right now, Ruby Rose Fox. How are you, Ruby?
I'm so great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm really excited to have you on, and I've got your Boston Globe article here. Well, not yours, but yours and nine others, I guess. But still. It talks about how you are set up for a breakout year. You have a very unique voice. Oh, it also looks like you were female vocalist of the year last month.
True. Yeah, that's true.
Last month as of January. So that would be December. that is so awesome.
That's true.
What did you say?
February didn't really exist for us in Boston. We're blocking it out of our memory. Yeah. It was last month for us.
Yeah, so you're on a roll there with the Boston Music related awards. That's totally awesome. Congratulations on both of those.
Thank you so much.
And I'm just really excited. We've got, I guess I'll go ahead and give it away now if people haven't already seen on social media. We've got two songs that are pretty much going to be heard here first, right?
Yes, that is the truth.
Awesome. I'm so excited. So we'll sort of talk about your background a bit and somewhere in the episode, I'll start playing the first one and the second one and it'll be great. So
great. Can
you tell me a little bit about just your general musical background? How long have you been at this?
I sang as a child and as a young person, but I decided to study theater and not musical theater, just straight theater. I started this musical project about, I guess four and a half, almost. I mean, I picked up a guitar about 5 years ago and just said, I want to start writing songs. So it's new generally to me.
Yeah. That's not too terribly long, really.
Yeah.
For especially how far you've come. So you couldn't play at all before that? You just picked it up and started learning, or had you?
I had a Broadway audition. It was for musical called Spring Awakening, and I wanted to play my own accompaniment, and so I bought this guitar last minute, and so I had it lying around, and yeah, I really was pretty awful. I'm still kind of awful at it, but
well, we don't want the audience to know that. I'll go ahead and strike that from the record. Well, that's why you got yourself a quite an impressive backing band there, so.
That's true. What you can't do well, hire someone who can.
Yeah, contract it out.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I actually have a bit of a theater background myself, so
I kind
of understand where you're coming from with Spring Awakening and all that. But yeah. you had said you studied non-musical, so that was that a branching out for you, or had you been doing both?
No, I really hate musical theater.
That makes two of us, except for Sondheim, Adam Gettle, and like a couple others that are amazing.
Oh, yeah. I think my friend just married him, actually.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. New show. We're talking about this. Yeah.
I didn't like the form of it. I mean, there was some that was really great, but I knew that as a career, I'd have to do a lot of, to do like the few musicals that I really loved, that I'd have to do a lot that I didn't. And
oh my God. This is awesome. I feel the exact same way.
So I studied, you know, the straight plays. I did a lot of Shakespeare mostly. And started writing my own one woman shows. And that's kind of when I realized that that's when I was really falling out of love with theater and,
falling in love with yourself. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I was trying to, I was definitely trying to express something through these plays, but right. I knew I wasn't a playwright. Like they weren't very good. and you know when they're not good, and you also know when it's just not your talent. And I just knew that I wasn't a playwright. So when I started singing at these like teeny little events where I live, I knew that that was going to be the right medium to get what I was trying to get across. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Did you start writing lyrics and stuff then? Or
yeah, yeah.
Transition from the one woman play to the one woman
exactly.
song.
Yeah, I realized that I could say really weird stuff and people would like just they'd be fine with it through a song. Yeah,
that's so cool. Yeah, I mean that really seems like a brief time. So you've definitely come a long way. Now you were with a different band, like a ska band, I think I read.
Yeah. We started when I was 14 and played for about 6 years.
Oh wow.
So yeah, that, so, you know, I didn't come out of nowhere. Like I knew how to be I knew what being in a band was like. And I knew a few things, from that experience. So.
Okay. Yeah. So these songs we're talking about today and we're playing.
Sure.
I understand they have a bit of a background in religion.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about some of those experiences?
Sure. So, when I started writing I think it was around the time that I was really listening to a ton of Leonard Cohen, who's Jewish, but also sort of, I think, is secretly wishes he was a Christian. well, he's actually not Jewish. He's Buddhist, but that's his, Judaism is his, I guess his, ethnicity.
I'm guessing his mom was Jewish. So
yeah. 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 Let's hope. but when I started writing, I was very surprised by how many religious themes were coming out of the music. And, cause I hadn't really been dealing with them in my other art. But I was raised as a fundamentalist evangelical Christian in upstate New York. So yeah, I think what I started to realize was that my whole brain was structured around the biblical stories, the idea of Jesus. And even though now I, you know, consider myself an atheist, they're still so much a part of my mythical structure.
Hmm. That they're coming out in your lyrics.
Right. Right.
That's interesting. So what was the process of, realizing you weren't a fundamentalist Christian anymore?
Oh, well, that was kind of a bummer. I was about seven. It started when I was seven and it took all the way to like, I think 17 or 18 to really deal, like really accept. I had a sibling that died.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And, it was, you know, I basically was told that, you know, Jesus Christ was, literally like in heaven and I could access and talk to, and if I was good enough, you know, he might respond. So, you know, I, of course, once she died, I started experimenting with how to get her back, and just nothing happened. And, you know, eventually I figured it out and I realized that, you know, a lot of what I had been told wasn't really true. And it was kind of like Santa Claus dying, but like 12 times worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, to me, I was told that Jesus was like a family member, and, you know, he was like my father, but even greater than that. And I was really, really connected to it as a child. I really believed it, and it was really a part of me. And so it was really, really heartbreaking. And I think when I deal with love songs, it comes out especially, because that was kind of my first epic heartbreak.
Yeah. A lot of people, I mean, can be a comfort. I mean, that's one of the reasons people will talk about that they need religion and that they like their religion, is it does give them a comfort when, you know, a loved one dies. But it's interesting. It's almost like you put it to the test as a result of that. It's like you kind of, sounds like you said, okay, let's try this out. You know, can I speak to my supposed father? Like, can I talk
to him?
How about the rest of your family? Did it shake them at all, or were they just strengthened in their faith?
I think that it shook them. I think that my mom and dad, it took them over, you know, 20 years to totally shake it off. My mom doesn't really subscribe to anything right now. My dad is a messianic Jew. So he still has a strong faith, but it's not as fundamentalist as it was back then.
Hmm.
I think when you deal with death, it's hard to, fundamentalism just doesn't hold up as well. You know, you see the cracks in everything. So my sister too, sort of got out of it as well. So,
oh wow.
Yeah. It's interesting that the whole family went there, just not all together, unfortunately.
Yeah. Did it damage your relationship at all when you realized you weren't into the religion, or?
I kept it a secret. I think it was too much of part of the structure of our family to like come out.
Sure.
And I was still like very much confused and not really ready to like let go or say that I didn't believe yet. It was just a very long, slow process. I know for some people, they're just like, nope, I don't believe it anymore. And they walk away. But for me, it took me a really long time to even be able to speak about it.
Wow. Yeah, no, I mean, I talk to a lot of people. No, of course not in your exact situation, but in similar situations, and, it's different. I think it takes a lot of people a while. I don't think it's,
yeah.
I mean, I spoke to, just off the top of my head, I spoke to a Scientologist who was really into it. One of my recent episodes, it was really cool. Three of my recent episodes, actually. It was a lot. He'd spent 27 years in Scientology, so it was a long story, and it was awesome.
Wow.
But he had sort of a, sometimes people will have a bit of a eureka moment, and then it might not be, oh, I'm an atheist, but it's something where they're like, you know, I don't accept this anymore. Like, I can't, this is not, something's not right, you know? And then there's a, usually a process after that of, for the Scientologist, Chris, I talked to, it was going on the internet and actually checking on some of the Scientology claims, but it's a little different. It could be, well, if you're fundamentalist, it could be similar. I mean, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there's less sites. But yeah. And I think when you're a child, you don't have those resources either.
Sure. Yeah. But it was a pretty long process for you. Do you remember the first time you thought like, I definitely don't believe in God?
Yeah. I mean, I think I was around 17 when I think I asked my parents if I could stop going to church with them.
How did they take that?
I think it was really confusing because I think they were also secretly struggling, which is why they didn't make me go. But I think Yeah. It was so slow and long that it's just hard to remember. But it was like around the age of 17 where I really kind of started to speak and put my foot down about it.
Were there any, I'm wondering, and again, of course, it does sound like it was a long, gradual process, so it's not like you can account for, you know, everything that was going on, but were there, what do you think was doing it? Was it arguments, or was it, you know, there's just no proof, or is what specifically do you think was?
Well, that's kind of a funny story. I did like a very logical test.
Oh, I want to hear this.
So, like, right around the time of Dahlia's death, I didn't get to say goodbye, so I really wanted to say goodbye, and that's all I wanted. So I would just pray every night in this really formal, ritualized way that I came up with, which is still weird to me. I think, I would pray and nothing would happen, and I just wanted him to bring her back just for one night. Never happened. And then I realized that, like, maybe I just wasn't good enough. Mm. Like, I wasn't being good enough. And I knew that, you know, in the evangelical world, the best thing you can do for God is convert someone. So I would go to all my, like, little sleepovers, and I lived in Binghamton, New York, and everyone there is pretty much Catholic. So, of course, it was prime time for me to convert all my Catholic friends to be born again. And I did.
Oh, really?
I converted, like, a lot of kids. And can you imagine what their parents thought when they got home?
Yeah, no kidding.
They're like, Mom, I'm a born-again Christian.
Who have you been hanging out with? Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. So...
Were you blacklisted at a lot of friends' houses?
I don't know if I ever heard about it. I mean, I bet they just thought, like, wow. So I was doing, like, really good work for God. And so I just assumed that because I was doing what God wanted me to, that he would reward me with the one thing that I didn't feel like took him a lot of effort.
Yeah, yeah.
So in my, like, kid baby brain, I just thought that this was going to work, and it didn't. It did, like, I would do it and it just wouldn't work. And so one night I said, okay, fine. Like, if you're not going to bring her back, then just bring her back in a dream. And then that never happened. And then I said, okay, bring her back in a dream, but I don't even have to remember it.
Sort of not falsifiable now, but
yeah. So I realized that I had, like, created this loophole for God.
Yeah.
And that's when it really clicked in my head. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, I wonder if this whole thing isn't true.
Oh, wow.
You know, because it's really, I mean, for the particular faith that I was in, I was really told, and you'll hear it in Blue Angel, I really, you know, the concept of a blue angel, like, my mom would put her hands on our bodies when we were fighting with each other and, like, try to exorcise the demons out of us. Like, demons and angels were supposed to be floating around right next to you. So the idea for me as a kid was really visceral. And then to realize that the whole thing might just be a total ruse was mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So, yeah.
Well, that is very interesting. I'm really sorry to, you know, have to have brought up such a kind of a painful memory, but I appreciate you talking about it.
Yeah.
And it does seem like there's, you know, a couple ways you can go. You can keep making excuses for God and, you know, kind of letting him off the hook, which I think a lot of people do, or you can, I think a lot of people, like you started to do, I think a lot of people probably blame themselves and just figure. Mm-hmm. It's just the kind of thing, it's really interesting. And I wonder if you had, like, maybe by coincidence or because you were thinking about it, had a vivid dream about your sister. I wonder if you would have still be in the religion right now.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Because I did have dreams later in life. Mm. But I kind of wonder that if I just had happened to have a dream, that had fulfilled my sort of needs that I would have subscribed that to me asking. And yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, this seems like a decent time to play our first exclusive song with that knowledge in hand. Very interesting. Is there anything else you want to say to introduce Blue Angel?
No, it's just our new single and I'm psyched about it.
Awesome. That's all the intro we need. I'm going to go ahead and play it. Just warning you, it might sound a little weird over Skype, of course, but it'll sound great to the listeners. Awesome. Excellent job on that song. Now I have a bunch of questions. I'd already heard it, but it reminded me of a bunch of questions of, you know, your vocal style. It's so funny how different you sound when you're singing than when you're speaking. what are some of your influences for your sound and stuff like that?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, Roy Orbison was always my favorite as a kid.
I love Roy
and I
Orbison.
Think that really sculpted the lowness of my voice, maybe. Patti Smith is a big one that I really love. Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I would say that, yeah, Roy Orbison and maybe Leonard Cohen are my biggest influences, probably.
So it just maybe it just sort of came out in an amalgamation of whatever, huh? There's not a lot of thought to it. Just You know, it's funny. The band you're touring with, which I'm not sure how much we talked about the tour actually. We'll definitely go ahead and talk about that soon. But it said best known for hits only "The Lonely," and I was like, wait a minute, that's Roy Orbison. What's going on there?
Yeah, we have this like weird tie, but I actually just finished a new song called "I'm One of the Lonely Too." I don't know if I'm going to get it ready by a tour, but yeah, there's this really cool connection with Roy Orbison.
Yeah, I really love Roy Orbison. So their song is coincidentally named the same, or is it?
Well, I believe that she also really loved Roy Orbison.
There you go. It's the Roy Orbison tour. Roy.
So, yeah. I'm super excited. Yeah, it's called Martha Davis and the Motels. I think they were just called the Motels in the 80s. And we're going to be leaving for tour with them on the 11th, 12th.
And I'll say now, if anyone wants to check that out, you can go to patreon.com/RubyRoseFox. And there's info on that, and as well as, of course, a way to support Ruby on the tour. So check that out, everyone.
Yeah, we're going to be making videos behind the scenes, so you can kind of see the nitty-gritty, dirty tour.
Yeah, there's going to be, you're just going to be on a drug problem, like they can't get you on stage.
Yeah, well, I have two yoga instructors as backup singers, so a lot of like coconut water and stretch breaks.
And I love that that sound on the chorus. It was really 60s, that like that guitar kind of echoing the melody. That was really cool. I like that. As well, is there a Hammond organ in there somewhere?
Yeah, that's exactly. Awesome.
Hammond organ is never a bad idea.
It's always a good idea.
I should add it to my show just as I'm speaking. Just back me up, you know.
I totally agree. Everything's better.
So, I was going to ask you, speaking of your yoga instructor, how did you form your backing band? How did that go? Walked into a yoga studio and said, "All right, you play guitar, you play the organ."
Yeah, it's been pretty long and slow. I think because I started out just a few years ago, I've been slowly putting together the right team of musicians, and I think when I was first starting out, I didn't have the luxury of I was playing alone a lot. And then, putting a band together. But I think just in the last 6 months, I've finally put a group together that I really love and believe in. A lot of the backup singers I knew from theater. And then we have about five now. And
It's got to have that gospel sound, right?
Yeah. And the guys I mostly met just kind of through the Boston rock scene. But they're a special group of people. It's really, I feel really grateful to have a team of people that are super amazing and supportive.
Yeah, it really is a cohesive sound. It may not be easily defined, I guess, but it really sounds like you guys are all on the same page as to what you're trying to do. So how does the writing process go for you? Do you handle, everything, or do you have lyrics and then maybe you have, a melody or whatever? How does that work?
Lately, I've been working with a co-writer who is actually a drummer and he plays with a really amazing musician in town called Will Daly. His name's David Brophy. But in the past, for example, these songs, I pretty much completely write myself and make a demo with suggestions of arrangement.
Oh.
And in this case, these two singles were done by a collaboration of two different producers who wanted to work together in Boston, named Benny Grotto and John McLaughlin. And they came to me, actually, to two tunes, which was really, I mean, for any artist to have two producers come to you and say, we want to do these songs, we like these songs, we know what we want to do. It's so cool. And it's so nice. Because usually it's the artist going to a producer saying, do you like me? Do you like me? Take me. So this was really cool to have somebody else come to me and say, we want to do this.
I can imagine. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So they had heard these songs specifically and said, let's do it, or.
Yeah. They had come to see me live a few times. And they knew that they wanted to record me, but they weren't quite sure which ones. And yeah, they just kind of sat me down and they said, Blue Angel and Good Friday. Those are the songs.
And they said, you'll play them on Atheistically Speaking. And no, they probably didn't, exactly. Probably didn't say that.
And they were cool with the, religious ambiguity and, and perhaps, I don't know, offensive material. So they're awesome. They made them sound so
they
great.
Are definitely well produced. That's for sure.
Thanks.
You mentioned it earlier. So is a blue angel literally one of the things that your family believed was around you at all times? Is that what
I mean, that's just a term. I mean, I guess when I was thinking about it, I never really understand or even like consider what the songs are about till way after I write them. but yeah, I mean, I think what I'm referring to in the song is, yeah, like a demon or like a force outside yourself.
Well, don't feel as though you need to spoil it too much. I know a lot of people have different kind of views on, you know, if people should take the lyrics to mean whatever they want. Or
totally, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
I just wasn't sure if Blue Angel was some term, you know, fundy term that I didn't know.
No. Okay. It was something that I, like, my subconscious kind of made up. But so, no, it's not a fundamentalist term.
Okay.
Yeah, lingo, no.
It's not, maybe it's like Pink Moon. I don't know. do you know that song?
No.
Oh, okay. Nick Drake. It's good. Not exactly the same style as you, so maybe. But
is it referring to the same thing?
No. No. It's just a random, I just remember it's the same sort of thing where it's kind of random. I'm sure he had some meaning behind it, but we'll probably never know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And
I
that's
got
okay,
it.
You know, that's music.
Totally.
Okay, let's I want to play the next one. I'm excited
sure.
for the next one as well.
Yeah.
Anything you want to do to introduce this one?
Oh, no, let's talk about it after.
Sounds good. Here we go. Here's Good Friday.
Tommy, put down the phone. Go fly. Light and starvation are gonna love me. Take your time, roll every stone. I'm getting down to nothing so you can hit my bones. I'll take a knife to the heart. Take my baby teeth and write your beautiful name. Oh, baby, one more prayer. I swear I'll surrender. I just can't keep holding on. One more night, I swear I'll surrender. You can take him, Gloria. Gloria, Gloria. Gloria. The hardest part of letting go. glad that you have a rosin, babe, but I'm still a desert wanderer. I'll take a nail to the cross, redeem your passion play, but I won't tear my hair, cause I'm still a
That was really good. I really like that song.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was awesome. I don't know what to say. I really love the holding on melody. That's kind of in my head right now. Yeah, also the hardest part of letting go is that it's easy is a very good line. So I don't know, again, how much you want to get into specifics or anything, but is there anything you wanted to say about that song?
Well, gosh, there's a lot. I mean, I think a lot of like my story about when I was little is a lot related to this song.
Yeah, I thought I heard some of that in there. It's really interesting.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the other part of this whole narrative that I think some of the song came out of, I had this thing in my head about like what would have happened if, you know, Jesus had fallen in love with a Jewish woman at the time. I mean, there was no Christianity. There wouldn't have been, right?
Would have been more incredible if she fell in love with a Christian, sure.
I mean, that would have been the real miracle.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what it would have been like if somebody had fallen in love with Jesus and then sort of like had to go through the whole death, but also like kind of not believe in it or you know, continue to be a Jew. And I'm also half Jewish. So there's a part of me that's, I don't know. I guess I always wondered about, I guess for some reason my imagination went crazy and I just imagined what it would have been like had there been a woman who loved him, but couldn't go on that journey with him.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought. No, I like that.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is just, I mean, I think this song definitely came out of a breakup, but I think because of my history, I always go back to that place of that moment, like having to let go of something that maybe you don't believe in anymore and how hard that is, even if you don't rationally believe in it, your heart is still sort of there. So yeah,
it makes sense. I can hear that now. That's really interesting, especially when you mentioned that story, you know, that's in this song. It really clicked. So thank you so much for coming on and talking about these songs and, you know, giving my listeners the first chance to hear them. I'm really, really happy about it.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me and debuting these two tunes. Mm-hmm.
And I also want to thank Roger, of course. I think he's the one who hooked us up. So thanks, yeah. Roger. I'm sure he's Roger's listening. So, and also, is there anything else we need to cover about the tour? So you'll be on tour for about a month or so?
Yes. Well, more like 2 weeks. But we got a string of shows from Cleveland to New York to Connecticut to New Jersey and up back to Massachusetts. So. Yeah, and everything's just on rubyrosefox.com, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. It's just called Ruby Rose Fox.
Awesome.
And yeah, and
I will definitely have links in the show notes too. And are these going to be on a part of a bigger album ever, or what's the plan in terms of these songs?
Well, in the fall, I kind of announced that I'd be putting out singles for the year. So I'm going to be recording probably two more, and then I'll be working towards an album. So I'm not sure which of the singles is going to end up as a piece on the album.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's a different vision.
Well, yeah. And you know, nowadays it's kind of weird. You don't necessarily have to go into that paradigm of releasing an album with singles.
Exactly.
And so you can kind of do a standalone thing, or what's that?
Yeah. I mean, the fun part is like, this is, these two songs are pretty conceptual, and it's fun to just play with an idea and then move on.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
And we will hopefully speak again sometime, and hopefully people will check out your music and your website and your tour and all that. Excuse me.
Definitely. And thanks for getting so up so early for me today.
No problem.
I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
All right, you too.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.